All right. Welcome to the 130 BPM right. podcast. It is December 8th. Thursday, December 8th. I'm here with Rob Hakimian.
What's up?
Sean Hyken.
Hey.
And Ray Finnielson.
You still messed it up.
I know, man.
How you say it?
Hi, I'm Ray Finlayson.
Okay, Finlayson. God damn it. So, Ray, you're our first, like, international guest. How's it feel?
I feel honored and slightly moist.
Oh. He's our first international guest on international territory, we should clarify, because right. obviously Rob is regular and is a recent U.S. transplant from England.
Yeah.
Rob, weren't you born in the U.S., though? I heard a rumor.
Yeah, I was born in Princeton. That's why I can live here now, because I have
you have citizenship.
Nationality, yeah, citizenship.
So you're only kind of half not American.
Yeah.
To be fair. With news. Animal Collective is starting to record their new album next month, which is sort of, it's good, but like, it's sort of disappointing that it's just only now that they're recording, right?
It's because they've all had so many solo projects.
They spend like 2 years touring off of Meriwether Post Pavilion also.
And then they had that movie that I can't remember the title of.
Oh, yeah.
Did they not do the whole thing in a museum as well?
Was that all of them, or was that just like geologists?
I don't know. I just recall hearing their name associated with it.
I think they showed their film in a few museums around the world as well. I think I was going to go to the one in London, but then...
Yeah, did anybody see it or listen to anything off that film?
No.
Man,
weird. I feel like that's weird. Like, I don't know anybody that's seen it or heard anything from it. You would think that would be a bigger deal, but...
I'd actually completely forgotten about it until you reminded me.
I just remembered as I was kind of thinking about it, but otherwise I had forgotten about it. But anyway...
Yeah, but every single one of them has brought out a solo album except Geologist.
Right.
And Deacon's now back in the band. I don't really know why. Why he left. Why they let him take a one-album break. That's so weird.
Didn't he have, like, parental duties or something?
I don't think so. I didn't hear that.
Anyway, is there anything else on this Animal Collective? Like, was there any more specific stuff than...
Nope, just they're going back into the studio. The Animal Collective have gotten to that size of band where that excites people.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that is exciting that, you know, they're gonna at least come out with another album versus not coming out with one, so...
Bringing out more crappy solo stuff.
Well, I mean, Panda Bear wasn't crappy. It was just a little bit underwhelming.
Oh, I don't know. I'm just saying that.
Did any of you guys listen to A.V. Tare solo album?
Yeah. No. I didn't like that at all.
Yeah. I didn't listen to it, but I heard it was...
But he's touring live, and we've got someone going to his show on Friday night, so read the live review on Saturday.
A.V. Tare, that is? Not Panda Bear?
Yes. Yeah, A.V. Tare.
I saw Panda Bear last year, and it was one of the worst shows I've ever been to.
Yeah, I've heard
really?
That.
Well,
I heard he just, like, played, like, Animal Collective stuff sometimes. Or that Animal Collective show, Panda Bear just did a bunch of his songs. Which is
really?
All of... The show that I went to, basically, he was just up there with his laptop playing beats off of it and occasionally singing. It was the most pointless. Like, why would you go pay money to see that? Like, I've never understood that.
Yeah, that's fine. That's like what a lot of electronic shows are. if without singing, so, yeah. But, I had another question. Anyway. Hey, what's up with that Spiritualized album? Did that just get announced?
This April or March or April, they announced that they'd changed labels. They signed to Fat Possum over here, and they signed to Double Six Records, which is a Domino subsidiary in the UK. And they said, "Yeah, we're nearly finished with our album. It's going to come out in the fall." And then we got to the fall, and they still hadn't announced it. They were like, no, it's coming out in March next year. And then today they finally confirmed that the release date and the title.
What's the title?
Sweetheart, Sweet Light, or Sweet Light, Sweetheart.
And that's their first since Songs in A&E, right?
That's right.
Which is a great fucking album, so.
Yeah, it's really good.
So they definitely have something to follow up. I almost, for some reason, I always kind of feel like Spiritualized is like past their prime, but they're definitely, definitely not.
They've been in their prime for over 10 years now.
Exactly. What else? We got more. There's a ton. Well, since it's like, I mean, we're transitioning into 2012. We have so many album announcements this week.
It's good. It's exciting for us who have to write news. Like, yeah. We went through a dry spell. No one wants to release their album in December, so there were no announcements. And now we get all the good stuff.
Yeah. So, Of Montreal announced an album for February. What's that called, Rob?
Paralytic Thoughts.
Yeah, Paralytic Thoughts. Ray's a big... You're a big Of Montreal fan, aren't you?
Well, yeah, but, I mean, I find... I mean, I love, like, certain stuff, but at the same time, I find it hard to keep a grasp of my fandom, and the last few releases have just been a bit, you know, iffy. And I mean, like, their last album, False Priest, was, I mean, it had its good moments, but it was just a bit rubbish at points. And
I liked it more than the one before that.
Than Skeletal Lampy.
Yeah, I hate Skeletal Lampy.
See, I have soft spots for Skeletal Lamping, even though it is very erratic, and I can see why people really don't like it. But I think I just preferred it because it felt more exciting than False Priest, which just felt like the Georgie Foot persona and all that, all those like sort of shenanigans. It felt like it tamed down. You don't want a tamed down version of Of Montreal. It just if Kevin Barnes is going to release something, you might as well just go all the way and do everything batshit insane as you can.
Right, which might be the case with the new album, because have you heard the song, Winter Debts?
I listened to it once, and I really didn't like it. I thought it was pretty terrible, but I was reading an interview with him, with Kevin Barnes, and it sounds interesting, because it sounds like he's getting rid of the Georgie Foot persona, and he's singing in first person, and it's a very dark album, and
The last time he said that, we got Hissing Fauna, so that's good.
Yeah, that's true, and that's probably like the best album they've put out in a long time, so...
Yeah.
It's promising, I think.
What do you guys think of the collaboration he or they did with Janelle Monáe last year?
That was actually not one of my favorite tracks on the album.
I know, I really don't like it.
Absolutely adore that album. I will put that album up against anything that's come out in the last 5 or 6 years, to be honest with you.
Totally.
But that was, to me, that was one of my least favorite tracks on the album. And I don't know if because of Of Montreal or because...
It sounds like an Of Montreal song. It doesn't fit.
It's really jarring.
Yeah, she doesn't even sing that much on it.
Yeah. I mean, if it was on an Of Montreal album, it would be all right, I think.
Yeah, it's just...
She's not on False Priest, though.
Yeah, no, she is on False Priest as well.
All right, yeah. But yeah, she doesn't make much. She doesn't do much on it. She just sort of does some backing vocals, and she gets forgotten about.
Yeah.
Speaking of didn't Janelle Monáe announce an album like way back at the beginning of the year, like that she was working on another one?
Yeah, but we don't have any.
There's nothing concrete.
There's nothing actually concrete, is there? I don't think. I don't think she's announced like a date or even a range of release dates. We can assume that it might come out sometime in 2012. That's one I'm going to be really keeping an eye on, because I was such a huge fan of her last album.
I know. I love that album to death. It's so good.
Yeah, me too.
And then Andrew Bird announced a new album and a tour.
And we've got a very nice discussion feature about Andrew Bird up on the site today, which Ray partook in.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I highly recommend reading it. It's mainly I think his name's probably pronounced Jesus, or I don't want to say Jesus because I've never known anyone to be called Jesus. But he seems very well versed, and I thought I was well versed, but he speaks very well about him, and it's an interesting discussion. And But yeah, I'm also excited about new album as well.
Yeah, I have never listened to Andrew Bird, to be honest, but reading your discussion made me very interested. So where shall I start?
That's a good question. I mean, I'd probably start with like The Mysterious Production of Eggs, because that is probably the album that most people are going to like.
What do you think the new album's going to be like?
See, I don't know, because that's the thing with Andrew Bird. He's always so dynamic, and you never know. He's got his own sort of niche sound, but at the same time, he can take that anywhere he wants, and no one's going to be entirely shocked. So I really don't know what to expect. I mean, all I know, there'll probably be lots of violin and very clever wordplay on it, as always, but I don't know how it's going to sound, but I'm excited, hopefully it'll be worth the wait.
And wait, one more question. If he was going to get in a violin battle with Owen Pallett, who would win?
Andrew Bird would win.
not even a moment of hesitation.
I have thought about this before, being the sad Andrew Bird obsessive I am, but I think, I mean, as Owen Pallett's a very fine violinist and musician overall, but I just think, you know, Andrew Bird's just got something else on top of him. But I would actually love, they did collaborate briefly, I think, on an Owen Pallett EP. I think last year, but he didn't really. It was like him, Andrew Bird, and like, you know, 20 other artists. So he didn't really get to hear what it actually those two minds coming together sounded like, which would be very interesting.
Does Owen Powell always tour with Arcade Fire, like as one of their?
I don't think he hasn't toured with them for years. I don't think.
Well, I saw him play with them in Montreal, but I don't know if that was just because they were... I mean, Owen Pallett was playing the same festival, so he just, you know, hopped on stage.
Yeah, that's probably why.
Okay. And any more album announcements worth mentioning?
Matthew Deere announced a new album.
Did he?
Today, which I'm also very excited about as well, which... Because his last album, Black City, was my personal favourite of 2010.
I couldn't get into Black City for some reason, even though I do really like it. I mean, I like Black City, but in terms of how it stacked up against, what was his previous album called?
Is a Breed?
Yeah, that one I really like, but Black City I couldn't get into. But when's that album supposed to come out?
It's just out next year, but it's got an EP coming out in January to build up hype about it, but yeah, again, hopefully that should be good. It sounds like there's like a teaser trailer which is posted in the news section of the site now, thanks to Rob, and it sounds weird, but it sounds a lot, you know, brighter than Black City, which might be good.
Interesting. Yeah, so I guess the only thing left to talk about is the Grammy nominations, which came out last week, I think, the day that we recorded, actually. So, who was nominated? Bon Iver got nominated for four things, or three?
Four, I think.
He got nominated for Song of the Year, Record of the Year, Best New Artist, which is hilarious because his first album came out in, what, 2007, 2008?
Yeah.
And then Best Alternative Music Album as well.
Okay.
So, and then is he on one of the Dark Twisted Fantasy tracks that got nominated or not?
No. I'm pretty sure the only one of those that got nominated was All the Lights, which he wasn't on.
That's a shame. I want to see the whole posse roll up there when that wins, except that's not actually going to win, probably.
That's going to win when that wins what?
Song of the Year?
It's not going to win Song of the Year.
What's going to win? Rolling in the Deep?
Yeah, clearly.
Do you think Adele is going to win every category she's in?
I would be shocked if she didn't. That's why I'm not too, like, as much as you can be bothered about the Grammys, which, as we know, are a complete joke, but having Kanye be snubbed and not even be nominated means that, you know, when inevitably Adele does sweep everything, it's not like, oh my god, I can't believe she beat Kanye or beat something that, like, I actually did care about. Because, like, what else is nominated? Like, the Album of the Year nominees are Adele...
Adele, Foo Fighters, Lady Gaga, Bruno Mars, and Rihanna. So, yeah.
See, out of those, I'd be totally okay with Adele winning. In fact, I think that's probably the best album out of those.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, okay, I liked Lady Gaga's album more than a lot of people, but still.
Yeah.
Like the Foo Fighters thing, I just don't understand at all. Like, are they just that establishment now that that's like the safe rock choice that the Grammys can make, like it's like Dave Matthews or something? Is that, yeah, are they really, like, to that point? Or
I think they are. I think that's what they're saying.
That just made no sense. Like, I don't even know anybody who listened to that album.
I listened to it. It's pretty good. But I mean, I don't know why you got a Grammy nomination. It's pretty crazy. I mean, does that automatically mean it should win the best rock album? Because it's not only in that category, it's in the best overall album, so by definition it should win best rock album.
Candidates
for rock album aren't very good either, so...
They are
Jeff Beck, Kings of Leon, Red Hot Chili Peppers, and Wilco.
Jeff Beck? Well, what the
Well, I mean, that's what the Grammys will do. They'll always, every time anybody from the 70s comes out with anything, they'll always nominate them. Like, you'll always see Bruce Springsteen get nominated, Eric Clapton, Neil Young, Bob Dylan, anybody. This is what's funny about the Grammys. We'll all get, like, we get so bent out of shape when we don't agree with the nominations, but then no matter what, at the end of the day, we're always just like, oh, this is a joke anyway. It has no credibility, which is true. But last year,
there was some hope because Arcade Fire won, and that was like...
Yeah, but this year there is no equivalent Arcade Fire in the Record of the Year category, so who are we supposed to support?
Well, Song of the Year is a pretty...
What's the difference between Song of the Year and Record of the Year?
Yeah, that's what I don't understand either.
I'm pretty sure it's just who gets rewarded for it. I'm pretty sure the Song of the Year award goes to the songwriter, and the Record of the Year goes to the artist who performed it. That's my understanding of it.
I think you're right.
So, if it's a song that wasn't written by the artist, the person who writes the song would get Song of the Year, and the performer would get Record of the Year.
No one wants to see the songwriter go out there and give a speech. No one knows who they are.
Well, I mean, it's not always true.
I mean,
imagine if Katy Perry won. It's like, you know, and the songwriter came up, it's like, we don't want to see you. We want to see Katy Perry in some crazy ice cream outfit.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But I mean, if Bon Iver wins, it's obviously Justin Vernon that's going.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Do you think he'll be there?
He's got so many nominations. I can't imagine not being there.
I feel like anybody who gets nominated for the big sort of has to be there.
Is Radiohead going to be there for best alternative music album?
I don't think they give that one out on TV.
Oh, wow! It's alternative, so it doesn't get onto TV.
Well, I mean, just to give context to this discussion for people who are listening, I mean, Bon Iver has sort of been weirdly in the news. Just, I mean, that interview with, I think it was the New York Times, came out where he just totally wrote off the Grammys as, like, you know, compromising to an artist's work or something. And then, I mean, the Avalanches of all people, the Avalanches, who haven't put out a record in like 11 years, like, started calling him out for doing whiskey advertisements. And it's kind of this weird week for that type of stuff.
Well, I'll say this. If Bon Iver wins, I don't want to read a single think piece about what it means for the future of indie, because Bon Iver is, I mean, he's so mainstream by now, and I'm not even saying that, like, that's a bad thing. I wasn't a fan of his last album, but, you know, he's on Kanye's, he was on a track on Watch the Throne, too, so he was on, he's in sort of in Kanye's inner circle. He's in, like you said, he was in whiskey commercials.
He gets the best reviews from even people like Rolling Stone.
Did they give?
What did they review?
I think so. Pretty sure they gave it a high review.
That's so weird. How mainstream is Bon Iver? Like, can you just walk down the street and shout that name out, or?
I don't know.
Certainly not in Britain. He's not.
Right.
He has a following, but you know, if he went down the street shouting his name, he'd probably just get looked at in a weird way, and people think you're talking bad French.
Yeah. Well, I think in any sense, just going down the street shouting somebody's name. You know,
Are we shouting Justin Vernon, or are we shouting Bon Iver?
Bon Iver, I think. Well, that makes sense, because doesn't that mean, like, good morning? Or
it means good winter. It means good winter.
Yeah, so, hey, man, don't knock it.
Good winter.
If you go to Paris, maybe, then, at this time of year, you might not get too many weird looks.
Yeah.
But if you just, like, start shouting in the middle of, I don't know, some predominantly English-speaking city, just like started shouting, Justin, Justin! You probably just get some people called Justin coming up to you and say, what do you want?
Yeah.
Or people would think that you're talking about Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
It's also, that's a symptom of Bieber fever.
Robin, so the electronic album isn't, I mean, there's obviously Deadmau5 and Skrillex, which is whatever, but Robin and Cut Copy got nominated, which is pretty cool.
If either of those win, I'd be happy with that. I want to know who do you think?
Can we talk about how Skrillex got like 5 nominations or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even know who Skrillex is.
He makes really mainstream dance dubstep.
Okay, so he's like the face of the like the bro step type stuff.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. God damn it! If anything could die out, it would be that type of shit. Just how I can't even express how stupid the like what dubstep means to most people. God, I hate it. Anyway.
See, what annoys me is I was having a discussion with a friend earlier in the week, and she was talking about how she now hates the whole idea of dubstep because she had it, like, pumped, like, her sister was, like, you know, playing it constantly, and it was that kind of rubbish, terrible dubstep, like, electronic nonsense, instead of, you know, like, more authentic grime-based one.
Like, somebody explain this to me. What is the difference between good dubstep and bad dubstep? Like, I hate to sound, I'm gonna just sound like an old person or whatever, but it all sounds the same to me.
Well, no, because, like, the whole dubstep is, like, it's just, like, that stuff you hear with wobble bass that's just, like, really aggressive and
yeah.
Awful.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, it's weird because dubstep as a genre has come to mean that stuff, but when most people say dubstep, that's what they mean, but dubstep used to mean stuff like Burial, and I mean James Blake was dubstep at one point. Now I think,
it's a lot more about the drums than the bass. I think
it's weird too, because like I mean, if you follow this stuff, people started calling it post dubstep just to differentiate from that kind of shitty club music, which sounds like just really bass heavy trip hop. Doesn't really sound anything. It doesn't have like a really dub aspect to it. So, but now it's got, like, post-dubstep, that word has kind of fallen out, and now it's just become, people just say bass music, which is an actual kind of, like, term for, I think, English sort of under, like, a sort of scene that started in London or whatever, and is now kind of just the word that you can get away with calling anything that, you know, sounds like Burial, I guess, that's a little bit more IDM than it is club fodder. I don't know. It's all this weird kind of naming convention bullshit that doesn't really make sense.
Unless you plan to delve into it, Sean, I just wouldn't even...
Right, don't even try to comprehend it.
I wasn't planning on it, but...
I mean, dubstep Go ahead, Ray.
I was going to say, like, the difference between, as Sean was asking, definitely good dubstep and bad dubstep is probably just subjective. I mean, I like, you know, I would, as I said,
right,
bad
but Will,
dubstep
you,
to
so
me.
Will, you were saying that you didn't want to see the dubstep like this Skrillex record that got nominated for a whole bunch of stuff. You wanted to see like good authentic dubstep. Like what? Like so? What is the? What
I mean,
the thing
I guess
different?
That doesn't even really exist anymore, right? Like it's that dubstep.
Like
doesn't
the
really
albums
mean
you took, yeah. Yeah, like the albums you talked about in the past couple of weeks, like not Machine Gun, but you reviewed.
Sepulchre.
You could call that dubstep, but that's not what they call themselves, probably.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's this. Okay, so I'll try to explain it, and I'm Because it's this whole fucking thing. But, I mean, there's bass music. So there's bass music, which is like this whole sort of umbrella. And underneath bass music is dubstep, is funky, garage, two-step, what else? Like drum and bass, footwork, like all these subgenres of bass music. And dubstep was one of those subgenres. But then dubstep became mainstream, and people latched onto that term, and now they use it for basically stuff that sounds like, you know, just wobble bass with heavy drums under it. That's basically what dubstep has become. But in the beginning, dubstep meant two-step, but with, like, dubby kind of production, and even some, like, reggae influence. And now it's just become, like I said, just weird, kind of whacked out. I mean, people call it, I've heard the term bro-step thrown around because it becomes this, like, you know, sort of fraternity kind of, like, flexing contest type of music. I don't know. It's this whole weird thing that you would never... This whole conflict that you'd never see if you didn't look for it. It's really strange.
Right.
Did that explain...
Taking that... Yes. But, yes. I think
sort of.
It explained it well.
I mean, it explained it about as well as it could have. I still have no idea what any of this stuff is, but...
I think it's something you have to listen to. If you want to appreciate it and understand it, you just have to listen to it. And if you like it, then you delve further into the style you like, and if you don't, then, well, you don't like it. It's not for everyone.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, but, like, I mean, even, like, James Blake came out. Like, everybody, all the kind of, these bass artists, James Blake, I think even Sepultura kind of came out and said that what dubstep has become is this weird kind of, I wish I could remember the exact words, but it's, like, flexing contest between
these. I
think
I saw this.
Yeah. And I don't know, like, that, like whatever. But at the same time, it's, like, this weird thing. Because, like, to me, dubstep has become, you know, every Thursday night at my local kind of shitty dance club. That's, like, what dubstep is. And then there's, like, all the music that we review and listen to, which doesn't really, I mean, anymore have anything to do with dubstep. So, I don't know, at a certain point, it just becomes, fodder for kind of whatever, you know, people who like to label things. I guess you could say. I don't know. Whatever. Whatever!
By bringing this all back around to the Grammys, is Skrillex gonna win the Best New Artist? And what does that mean if he does?
It means we're doomed as a people.
I'd like to see Bonnie Raitt win
it
just for the hilarity.
It just means the Grammys have terrible taste.
Yeah, you're that's right.
Which is not really news to anybody, but...
Who decides on the winners of the Grammys? Is it, like, a independent board, or is it, like, a public board?
That's my question. Is it, like, the Academy Awards where everybody that's kind of won votes, or...?
I think it's just sort of a board of record executives and industry people. It's in their best interest to vote for the stuff that sells the most because they want to use it to foster goodwill with record companies anyway.
So the artists don't get a vote at all?
I don't believe so.
That's so weird. I think the reason why people get upset about it is it's because it's the most mainstream event that music has, and it's just not representative of music at all. You know? And, like, the idea of, you know, the most mainstream representation of music, the ceremony that could be, just... is completely squandering whatever potential it does have. So, I mean,
and it's not even that it's the most mainstream, strictly speaking, because occasionally you'll have something that's a little bit outside of the box, like Arcade Fire winning. But it's like,
right?
It's like it's sort of a combination of they'll either do something super mainstream like Beyonce or Lady Gaga or like Taylor Swift. Or they'll sort of go in totally the other direction and just seem like there's, like, the Robert Plant Alison Krauss album won all the awards a couple of years ago. So, like, it's sort of the same thing as, like, with Rolling Stone. They can't decide whether they want to be super current and mainstream or whether they want to cater to the, you know, 60s and 70s.
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, I was really happy when Arcade Fire won, so... I mean, mostly because it was hilarious. The reactions by, you know, most people were hilarious. Not known.
Has anybody registered whoisboniver.tumblr.com?
Yeah, it's there.
So just in case he does win one of the awards, you're going to see all these like.
Well, even before this, because he's got with four nominations, he's already started to get the tweets.
Yeah, that stuff's amusing.
It's already up. With a hyphen between each word.
Who are the suburbs? Who are they?
Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah.
All right, that's the Grammys. Do we have anything else? Wait, did
no.
Lil Wayne really got nominated? Let's take a look at the best rap albums.
Of course, it's all a joke, except for My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy and Watch the Throne. Because what are the other three? It's
Lupe Fiasco,
Carter IV. Lupe, oh god, yeah, Lasers, and then
Nicki Minaj.
The biggest, like, people are talking about how much of an insult it is to Kanye that he didn't get nominated for Album of the Year for My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. The biggest slap in the face to him would be if Watch the Throne beat My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy.
But don't you think it could, because Jay-Z, like...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it couldn't happen. I'm saying that if Kanye would want something to look at as a big insult, you got, you know, out of the two albums that he was involved in that were nominated for this thing, the one that's, you know, one of the most critically acclaimed, deservedly in my opinion, albums of the last, you know, frankly, decade, versus an album that has been, you know, criticized for, you know, being too excessive and just being, I don't know,
yeah,
sort of a throwaway collaboration with Jay-Z. And I'm not saying this is my opinion, because I quite like Watch the Throne personally, but for Watch the Throne to beat My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy in a category for best rap album would be kind of a joke. Although not as much of a joke as like if I mean, especially, I mean, the worst thing would be if Lasers won, because that's the worst album of the year in my opinion, no question.
Did that come out this year or last year?
This year.
It came out in, like, February.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, Watch the Throne had a kind of too-big-to-fail sort of dynamic going for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
I mean, I don't really like Jay-Z or Kanye West, but I'm interested to see. I mean, obviously, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy deserves to win that, but I'll be interested to see what happens.
One thing I will give the Grammys is that My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy and Taylor Swift's last album were both, you know, released within the time frame that they would be eligible for nominations. But I had been basically predicting the entire year that they were going to nominate both of them for Album of the Year just to try to play up the Kanye Taylor thing again for some cheap ratings. And it didn't happen. So I just want to give them some mild prop for that.
They abstained from cheap tricks.
They abstained from bringing the Kanye Taylor Swift drama back into the forefront.
Has Kanye West ever won a Grammy?
He's won Grammys for categories. He's never won Album of the Year. But
okay, yeah, I guess that's what I mean. But let's talk about what we've been listening to. Rob, what have you been listening to?
I have been listening to Miracles of Modern Science's debut album, Dog Year. Which my review went up today. I like it a lot. Me and Evan have been fans, Evan Kaloudis have been fans of Miracles of Modern Science for quite a while. I don't know,
Is this really their debut album? Because I feel like I've heard you guys talking about them for as long as we've been doing this website, for over 3 years now.
It's been like 2.5 years. And they put out an EP that was amazing. They gave it away free. And then, yeah, they kind of disappeared. I kind of thought they'd split up. And then this summer they announced the album. And, I've been listening to a lot recently.
Where are they from?
They are from Princeton. They met at Princeton University.
Is that how do you know them?
I don't know them. Evan might know them. I think Evan.
Oh, okay.
Evan introduced them to me. I can't really remember now. It was so long ago. They're like a band with a mandolinist, a violinist, double bassist, a drummer. They don't have any guitars or bass, and they're just really fun, really upbeat folk pop kind of stuff, and they make really goofy lyrics, and they use like animal sounds in their in some of their songs, and yeah, just it's just a really enjoyable album.
I listened to it a little. I listened to the first three songs, I think.
Yeah.
And I like it. One of the lyrics I remember was "Elevator to the Sun," which that's a pretty good lyric. And what's the other one about the moon? Do you know what I'm talking about?
You'll meet a typhoon on the surface of the moon.
Yeah. They have pretty cool lyrics. And but what surprised me was they actually can fucking rock too. Like they have violins and a lot of. I mean, it was surprising how much kind of detail they had, and they managed to kind of dodge that folky rock pop. Yeah. I guess like it definitely has its own style that doesn't sound like kind of bland, watered down. I mean, it's almost like maybe bluegrass. Is that fair to say? Do you think?
Maybe at points.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing doesn't sound like bluegrass because I really don't like bluegrass, but there are elements in the, I guess, the instrument, like there's, like you said, mandolin and stuff like that. But,
yeah. But the production is like really poppy. It's like emphasis on the chorus, vocals up front, sing along lyrics, you know.
Yeah.
It's just really catchy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's something I'll, just to be honest, I don't think it's something I'll go back to, because it's just not my type of music, but it's definitely, I think it's good and has its own thing going on, and I was really surprised with kind of, you know, how bombastic, I guess, it got at certain points, which is really cool.
Yeah, bombastic for sure.
Yeah.
And if you want to listen to it, because I guess most people listening to this wouldn't have heard of Miracles of Modern Science, it is streaming for free on their Bandcamp, so just Google them and you'll find it.
How big are they? Like, are they gonna get reviews?
No, because I don't think they even got signed for this album. They just used Kickstarter, you know, to build up the money and release it themselves.
It sounds pretty expensive.
Yeah, maybe it is. I don't really know how much they had to get.
Yeah, I mean, just in terms of, I mean, I guess it's they probably don't. I mean, the whole band is probably like a band. It's not session musicians, but they have the kind of instrumentation that sounds, I guess, expensive by in and of itself. So I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I wonder if it'll work live. I'd like to see them. Hopefully, they'll do like South by Southwest next year or something.
Cool. Anything else on that?
No. Just go listen to it on the Bandcamp.
I had to listen to it earlier.
Oh yeah.
And I mean, I found like I read your review and you were saying like how it's nice and easy to like something like it's nice and easy to relax and listen to, but really enjoyable at the same time.
Yeah. And
I agree it's enjoyable, but at the same time it sounds very, you know, busy and you know, there's a lot happening, and I don't think I could like relax and.
I didn't say relax. I just. Said,
I might be quoting you wrong, but.
Yeah, I didn't say. Well, I don't know if I said relax. What I meant is, I mean, you can just turn it on, and you don't have to like think about it to enjoy it. You can just have it on, and you know, it's just so infectious that you like it anyway. But I mean, yeah, you can't relax to it. It's definitely very hyperactive album.
It's very it's good at points. I mean, certainly like the latter half of the album seemed to open up quite a lot more, and it's got a. I think one thing I really liked is how it sounds so heavy and not heavy, but you know, it sounds like there's a good force behind it without actual like guitars and all that. I was surprised, like it took me like until the end of the like first second track of it. Wait, there's no guitars in this. This is actually pretty good.
Yeah, the drums are pretty big.
But I think I need to. I probably need to spend a bit more time with it to appreciate it to the level you do, but. It's definitely promising.
Ray, what have you been listening to?
Admittedly, I've been sort of going back on a few records from this year. I've been listening to TV and the Radio's album, Nine Types of Light, which I think is very underrated. But the main thing I've sort of been listening to is this collaboration between these two Icelandic composers, if you will, one called Ben Frost and the other called Daniel Bjarn. I'm no good at Icelandic. Bjarnson. And the album's called Solaris. And it's, I mean, when I heard about it, I was I was really excited because the Ben Frost put out a really brilliant album in 2010, I think, called By the Throat.
Oh yeah, that's a and okay, I know who this is.
And Daniel, which I'll how I'll refer to him from now on, so I'm not gonna try to say his second name again. he put out a really good album, like a sort of neoclassical album last year called Processions, which was really very good. I think just slipped under a lot of people's radars because they didn't. There's not a huge market for it, but I thought it was just really impressive. And yeah, when I heard about it, I was really excited. But strangely enough, it's very underwhelming, and it's quite almost disappointing. And I've been trying to get into it, but it lacks. I mean, it lacks all the good things about each of their both last records. I mean, it's not like any tense, you know, atmosphere and, you know, any crescendos. Like, they're there, but they're gone in an instant. And the same with Ben Frost. I mean, it's like he was brilliant with all his atmospherics on By the Throat, but here you can barely hear him doing anything, really. It's kind of disappointing.
By the Throat was, I remember that what's the instrumentation on that? It's like violins and cello and like neoclassical stuff, right? But
it's a combination of classical instruments.
I remember one of the most far out. I mean, they made the cellos sound like wolves growling. That was so brutal. That was so cool. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
That was really cool.
That was.
My question is, does Solaris have anything to do with the movie or the book Solaris?
I thought it did originally. It certainly sounds like it sounds like a soundtrack. I mean, it's very, you know,
right.
Put it on in the background, and you know, you'll have listened to it within like 45 minutes without you realizing it. But I think I haven't done any research. I think I did some research a while ago when I got it, but I don't think it's directly linked to it. But I think there is some sort of story behind it, but I don't think it's been advertised too heavily.
I wish I remember.
But then again,
I wish I remembered the composer that did Solaris and all those movies, because he's pretty famous and had his own kind of proto sort of drone style, I think. So maybe it's gonna. I don't know. But you wouldn't recommend this if I liked By the Throat.
I mean, it's if you like By the Throat, I probably wouldn't recommend it. But then again, I haven't listened to By the Throat in quite a while, so
yeah,
a lot of that record sort of in the back of my mind. But yeah. And I probably need to go revisit it. But I think it's maybe like in passing interest. But I don't think it's. If you're going to take it in passing interest, it's going to impress you very much at all. I think it's one of these things you get, if you like it, it's because you've invested a lot of time in it and, you know, you've worked out the sort of subtle intricacies of it. But
right.
It's certainly, at the moment, it's not really kicking in for me.
Cool. So I've been listening to The OC's new album called Carrion Crawler / The Dream, which really really surprised me. I think this is their second album of the year. I actually didn't listen to the first one.
That's funny, because I listened to the first one and I didn't listen to this one.
Oh, really? So what did the first one sound like?
Well, did you even hear the first single they released from it called I Need Seed? It was the first track on the album as well.
Is it like sort of folky?
Yeah, folk poppy. It was really catchy. I loved it. And then the rest of the album kind of disappointed me. It was just really boring, kind of standard
right.
folk boringness.
Well, this is not that. This is the OC is just freaking out for 10 tracks, which is like, it's most comparable to Help of all their records, because Help was the kind of like one of the first records that the songs didn't really go over, you know, 5 minutes or 6 minutes or whatever. They kind of stuck to an almost pop length formula, and I mean, not it's not, they're not pop songs, but they have that kind of sort of very compressed length to them, I guess you could say. And
but the one song I have heard from this album is really long. It's like 7 minutes.
Is that The Dream?
Yes.
Yeah, that. Yeah, that's 7 minutes. But it's still all. They all have that kind of. I mean, the thing is, like, the OCs can get really kind of crowdy and out there and psychedelic and lengthy. But when I think they're the best when they sort of have these shorter songs and just focus on these sort of blasts of you know, guitar intensity. And Ray, are you a fan of the OCs?
No, I can't say I've listened. I've heard of them, but I've never listened to them.
Okay.
So, and immediately I thought, when you said the OCs, I thought about the OC, that TV program.
But that's true. Obviously, that has nothing to do with it. Fuck.
You've never thought that the OC sounded like the OC?
Well, I mean,
do they sound like Phantom Planet?
No. I mean, I've never said, I guess I've never, like, I've just looked at the title and I've never really said it out loud. So
no, I never realized that as well until you actually said it there. I just...
Yeah.
Did people watch the OC in the UK?
Yeah, we watched. We watched all of the OC. We loved it.
Because that just seems like such an American, like such a distinctly American show. Like I don't understand.
But like not even. It's so not even representative of anything.
we watch all your movies too.
I just thought, like, what is there to glom onto for people who aren't immersed in that specific kind of that specific part of American culture? I'm yeah. curious.
I mean, all the characters are really self-centered. And we still want to know all about them. Even in if you're from the UK.
Well, speak for yourself, man. Because fuck that show. Yeah, but no, the band The OCs, which is from San Francisco. I mean, it kind of goes back to we brought them up a little bit when we were talking about Mikael Cronin and Ty Segall, and they both came out with albums this year. But I actually think this The OCs is better because, like, I mean, every song is so just it just rocks and kind of takes you to that you know what you want in rock music, which is that sort of visceral, kind of just freak out level of intensity, and I love that, and pretty much every song does that, and even I like it better than Help, and I like Help a lot because like I said, Help has those shorter songs. But I wish I had more time with this album because I think we just made our list for the kind of year end stuff for 130 BPM, but this wasn't on there because it just came out like 2 weeks ago or whatever. So
yeah, well, one of the songs is on the song list.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
There's a spoiler for you.
Yeah, and it's the best song. It's so you've heard that song, Rob?
Yeah.
What do you like that song?
Yeah, I thought it was great. Yeah. I should have checked out the album really, but yeah. I thought about the album from earlier in the year, and I just got bored before I'd even listened.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's both sides of the OCs with the folk, and then this is just. I mean, if you like The Dream, then you like the whole album because the whole album is in that style, and none of the songs really disappoint if you like The Dream. So, I mean, The Dream is definitely the best one. They start screaming at the end; it's so awesome. But,
all right, I'll check it out.
Yeah. All right, Sean, what have you been listening to?
I've been listening to the new Roots album. It's called Undone.
Tell us about it.
I mean, how much background do you really want me to give on the Roots? You guys are all familiar enough, right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So this is their 10th studio album. It's a follow up to last year's How I Got Over, which I thought was also very good. This one is a little bit this one's pretty short. It's 14 tracks, but it's only like a little under 40 minutes long. There's a lot of there are a lot of really short tracks, a lot of instrumental interludes, and I think Black Thought, the MC, is as on top of his game as he's ever been, and musically, of course, since it's a Roots album, they're one of the most versatile bands in hip hop and frankly in any other genre that's working today. So they basically can go from something like One Time, which is, you know, sort of old school, like hip hop throwback to Cool On, which is more of like a funk rock type of thing. And so, I mean, it's a really diverse album musically, which we've sort of come to expect from the Roots, but this is, you know, it's as good as any of their other albums, I think, which is saying a lot because they, their catalog, we've been doing this for, you know, almost 20 years. Have any of you guys listened to it or?
Yeah, I've listened to it a lot. It's really good. I just want to echo everything you said. I think Make My with Big Crit on it is one of the best songs of the year.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it gets a little bit cheesy towards the end, but the first half is absolutely solid. And you haven't mentioned that it's supposed to be a concept album, I don't know if you know that. I think it's about a criminal, and it starts at the end of his life and it goes backwards, I think, like a Benjamin Button kind of deal, almost. Actually, that's
not
true.
I haven't sort of really delved into that side of it yet, but you know, musically, I think this album is great, and it's kind of interesting. I was actually talking to my friend about this the other day. Like, at what point do we start including the Roots in discussions of the greatest hip hop group of all time in the same conversation as like A Tribe Called Quest and Wu-Tang and De La Soul?
Are they not in the conversation? I think they are. By now.
I feel like they're sort of in the pantheon at this point of like the hip hop, like the all time greats, which. I mean, it makes sense, and I'm not saying anybody's saying that they aren't, but it's just the kind of thing where just because they're so active and they're so consistent, it's sort of it's not really anything you think about in a historical context because they don't really ever take breaks to let you think about stuff like that. But I feel like they've just sort of sneakily gone up there, and I feel like Black Thought can be put in the same sentence as anybody you would want to put in as like the greatest MC of all time also.
Right, I saw them live this past summer, and then, yeah, he completely blew me away. Like, I hadn't fully appreciated
them. I've seen them a number of times, and yeah, like, I will definitely vouch for the fact that seeing them live takes your appreciation of them to a whole different level, because they're just, and I mean, all their albums are good. They're the kind of band that's never really put out a bad album, and I don't know if they're even really capable of putting out a bad album, just because of, you know, the kind of band that they are. They're always going to be at least solid. But seeing them live, because when I saw them live, the first time I saw them was a couple months after James Brown died. So they did like a 10-minute James Brown tribute, and then they turned around and did a cover of a Bob Dylan song. And then like later in the show, they did a Police cover, and this was like in between a bunch of other instrumental jams and then also songs from their albums, which was like 8 or 9 albums by that point. And, you know, a few different times I've seen them, they've done Guns N' Roses covers. And I think that just sort of speaks to the fact that, I mean, as we've obviously seen since, you know, a couple years ago, they became the house band for Jimmy Fallon's show. But they're just one of the most versatile bands, I think, in any genre in terms of, you know, they can really play anything. They can learn anything. I was reading an excerpt of this Rolling Stone
yeah, I was just gonna bring that up.
Article today. They were talking about a time that Bruce Springsteen was on Fallon's show and he suggested a song that he wanted to play, and none of the members knew it, but Questlove, the drummer, like during the commercial break, looked it up and taught it to the rest of the band. By the next segment, they were working on it. What were you going to bring up about the Rolling Stone thing?
No, yeah, that's just what I was going to bring up, that story. That
I read crazy. That as well, and I was like, what?
That can't be real. That's so insane. Just to be like, yeah, I listened to this. Okay, let's play it.
Well, it doesn't surprise me that Questlove is.
It's also that article made me realize how kind of weird their status has become, because they definitely haven't compromised their status as like sort of pseudo hip hop legends. But at the same time, they're like this weird, their own kind of thing, like celebrity status. I don't know. They just occupy
right,
this
like
really
you're talking
place.
About him getting texts from Donald Glover telling him to go.
Like they're both hip and they're legends and they're commercial all at the same time.
Yeah, it's so weird, but it's like
it's just because they're genuinely talented.
Yeah,
and they seem to be like genuinely cool people as well.
Yeah, and I love Questlove. Like, he's such a voice of reason in all the bullshit that happens in hip hop, which. He's I don't know, and it's also cool that a drummer, I mean, he's the band leader, but also just the drummer can be, and he also has this like stoic kind of like I don't want to call it image, because he seems like he's actually like that, but he's not, you know, super... I mean, Black Thought kind of is the MC, and Questlove is the drummer, but at the same time, Questlove is sort of the head of that group. I mean, isn't that...
Well, true? I think with Questlove, I think it's... I mean, obviously, the fro is such an iconic look that sort of makes him the sort of image-wise, the face of the band. The thing that's really blown me away about Questlove, and this is a fact I learned years and years ago, probably 10 years ago, that just blew my mind, but... I don't really play drums anymore, but I used to, and I used to read like drumming magazines, and whenever I would see interviews with Questlove, and they would always have his equipment lists. He plays all the drums that he plays are really big, but he uses these super thin, like the kind of sticks that jazz drummers use, but he plays on drums that like are the size of drums that like heavy metal bands use. And so I've always been sort of impressed with how he makes that work.
Yeah.
And everything he does is just so precise and
yeah,
and yet he knows how to mix it up just enough to make it human and not sound like a drum machine.
Yeah, but does he oversee the production as well?
I'm pretty sure he does.
Yeah, I think so. That's what, like, hearing this new Roots album and just seeing how great they are makes me have more faith for the supposed next D'Angelo album. Because if he's still involved and he's still, overseeing it, then I have no doubt that it's going to be amazing.
Okay, so last question. What do you guys think is the best Roots album?
I've always been a pretty big Phrenology guy.
Yeah, Phrenology is the one that pops into my mind.
But really, Things Fall Apart is great. Their album from last year, How I Got Over, is excellent. Do You Want More? But really, they really have no bad albums, but I would say their three best are Things Fall Apart, Phrenology, and Illadelph Half-Life.
There it is. All right. Do we want to talk about how do you pronounce it, Giles Corey?
Yeah, let's just talk about it a little bit.
So Ray can get a word in.
Yeah.
So tell us about this album, Giles Corey, which we recommended last week, I think, or is it earlier this week?
It's last week. Yeah.
I don't know. I want to sound whenever I talk about the album, I want to retain and be like really mysterious about it because. It's something which with so much work put into it and so much detail and so much mystery and probably most importantly so much like emotion and like humanity in it. I don't want to spoil it for anyone really, but at the same time, I think at this stage, people are only ever going to hear the music properly. Because I think the original run of the actual CD comes with a book. It's like a 150-page book, and there's only like 200 of those, of which I think like there's 30 left last time I checked. So there's probably not going to be a great deal more people actually get full experience. But I mean, you can the album itself is still a hell of an experience.
Will and I have listened to it and not read the book, and we still found it pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I think the music itself is astounding, as I said, and I think if anything, the book just sort of gives it's just basically a story and him talking about all it's very odd. It's like him going into detail about like trying to find the answer of does he want to stay alive if he doesn't want to die, and or rather the other way around, if he doesn't want to stay alive, does he want to die? And he's just like looking into like trying to find the answer if there's like if there's a life after death and so forth. And it's all about this character called Robert Vuor, and who's like really very mysterious, and you can't find anything about him on the internet really. And it's just about like he's this sort of very odd figure who like claimed to be like some sort of psychic and like I think it was early 1800s or so, and early in the 1900s, and he dealt with all like electronic voice phenomenon, and it sort of explains all that, and it's quite harrowing reading, and but it's also very interesting, sort of just much like the album itself. There, it's.
Do you want to give
quite dull?
A little bit of background on like the artist that put the album together, like what he went through.
Yeah, I mean, the artist is Daniel Barrett, and I think he's in another band on the same label, Enemies List Recordings, And
which,
I can't remember.
I think
it's,
stop you there because it's called Have a Nice Life, right?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Which is really weird because I was super like without even knowing, like I didn't know about this album until you reviewed it, Giles Corey. But I was super into Have a Nice Life, like 3 years ago, and they're sort of like, I guess like post rock kind of shoegaze type stuff, but it has the same kind of aura. It's really weird because I was super into that album in a way that is becoming of this Giles Corey album, the same kind of, you know, isolated sort of depression steeped kind of music, and so it was weird to like realize that, you know, it's the same guy for me. But continue anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, he was in the band Have a Nice Life, and I don't know if they broke up or they've gone on hiatus or whatnot, or I don't know if it's just Daniel Barrett's own personal problems just stopped them, that band altogether. But basically, there was a time when he tried to kill himself, and he stopped himself. He's basically, the album is just like a story of him of his recovery, sort of, if it is to be called a recovery. Because it's hard to tell if he actually, at the end of it all, if he comes out of it, you know, better. I mean, he's alive, but I mean, like the last words of the book are, "And then I get up." So I don't know. There's hope in there, but it's all very mysterious. And as much as I don't want to dispel the sort of brilliant mystery of it all, There's a line of thought which has crossed my mind, in fact, and which has been brought up elsewhere by other people on the internet, and they're saying like how it could all just be a brilliantly huge like sort of concept and all entirely made up. I mean, he might well have like tried to kill himself, but the whole like Robert Boer thing and the Boer head device which he wore to try connect with spirits or whatnot, and apparently this could be all made up, and I can see how people could think that, and if it is made up, if it's all just a fallacy, then it's brilliant. It's a sign of a brilliantly gifted, you know, fantasist. But I don't like to believe that, because at the same time, it seems so personal, so real that I don't want to believe that.
Yeah, I understand that. If I found out it was all fake, I wouldn't want to listen to it anymore. I don't think. I don't know. Anyway,
it'd be like finding out like you know, Sufjan didn't actually go to Illinois, and he just sort of wrote this album in somewhere in like New York, and you know, it's
just looked up stuff in an encyclopedia. And just
that's a hilarious thought. I like that.
In your review, you start off with a bit of a discussion about scary albums, and I was wondering if you guys have a scariest album ever.
That's a good question.
I probably do.
What's yours?
Well, it can't. I mean, I probably already mentioned it to you, which is Demdike Stare, Triptych. It's actually on. I put it in my like top 10 list.
And you put it on our full albums playlist.
And that, like, you really have to be, I mean, it has to be the middle of the night, all alone, dark room, but that shit is so fucking scary, if you're in the right kind of atmosphere. I mean, they're like a kind of drone, techno kind of ambient group, and they sample a lot of sort of atonal kind of jazz and world music, and then they just put like the blackest, most evil sounding drones under it, and it just sounds like the devil's music. Like, it's really scary, and but it's awesome. That's my
I listened to one of their, I think one of their records sometime last year.
Yeah.
I think I was doing exactly as you. I was like, I was just reading in my bedroom once, and I think it was like, you know, 2 a.m. or some ungodly hour, and I was listening to it, and I was like, I really was like I don't like this. It's just quite disconcerting, and you know, but It was really, you know, atmospheric and creepy, but you know, this sort of thing, it's this sort of genre of music, is you have to be in a specific mood to want to listen to it, to want to freak yourself out.
I mean, that's a weird, disconcerting thing to happen is because, like, you don't listen to music to be scared. Like literally, fear is in your heart or whatever. Like, that doesn't happen in music. But when it does, it's, like, really weird because it's just, you know, music has that power to deliver, you know, certain types of emotion. And when it's fear, it's, like, it's a very strange experience because, it comes out of, I guess, your imagination or whatever, and it comes out of the music. But it's something that doesn't happen that often. And that's what I mean when I say this music is really scary. It's, like, really scared the shit out of me listening to it. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I totally agree. I mean, because, you know, I've always... The reason, like, I like scary albums is because, you know, fear is an emotion, and it's an extreme emotion.
Right.
And it's like, you know, it's like happiness or love or something like that. It's an extreme emotion, and for music or any sort of art to be able to evoke that or even provoke it is, you know, it's worthy of your attention, I think. Because you know, it's not every, you know, you get any generic record, which, you know, it's, oh, that's very pleasant, but things that can make you act, like, really connect with you and make you really, you know, happy, like, really happy, really sad, and things that can make you really shit scared, then I think that's stuff, I mean, stuff that's, like, you know, has to be paid attention to.
I think some bands make scary music, but they don't set out to scare the listener, but right. I think some bands actually set out with the plan to scare the listener. Like, the one you mentioned in your review is Scott Walker's album, The Drift.
Yeah.
That scares the crap out of me, and I can see no reason why he would have made it unless it was to scare people.
His album before that, Tilt, also is a little bit out there.
Well, yeah. Well, there's a track on Tilt, it's the second track, called The Cockfighter.
Yes.
And I remember,
yeah,
I
know
sent,
exactly
I sent that to a friend online one night, and she was listening to it, I was listening to it at the same time, and I was just sort of waiting for her reaction. There's a point in the song where you just, like, you know, they're gonna, you know, jump out their seat, and predictably enough, she did. She was, I'm pretty sure she hated me for about a week afterwards. this is again about 2 o'clock in the morning, and you know, that's not a time to play Scott Walker reel unless you want to have horrible nightmares. But Scott Walker's definitely one of the. I don't think he makes music to be scary. You know, I think that's more, as I said in your view, it's more of a consequence of the subject matter he's dealing with. I don't think he says, "Oh, let's have a big shrieking string section to, you know, make the listeners jump." But I think it's more consequential than deliberate.
Actually, that
he only listens to his albums once because he knows they're scary. He doesn't want to scare.
Yeah, that's his reason.
That Ben Frost album, By the Throat, was pretty fucking scary. And then the first album that ever scared the shit out of me, and this is also very you know, circumstantial, because I can. This is probably one of my top five albums ever, and I can go back to it whenever. But Godspeed's F sharp, A sharp, Infinity. First time I heard that scared the shit out of me.
I can imagine that scaring you.
Yeah.
I mean, have you seen them live? It's like being in a plane wreck.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that's definitely a result of, like, you know, it has to be the right atmosphere, it has to be the right sort of, I mean, it's a subjective kind of reaction to music, I think fear is, but.
Yeah, but I think you said you're right there. I mean, it's about having the right atmosphere. I think, so I remember one time I made the horrible mistake of listening to The Drift on my way to work once, and it was like, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning, and, you know, I think it was sometime maybe sort of at the end of summer one year, and it made me so fucking depressed. I was just like, oh Christ, I'm just gonna jump in front of a bus or something. I mean, I love Scott Walker, but it's just like, this is the wrong music for going to work.
Well, maybe it's the right music because it makes you so depressed that when you get to work, it seems nice.
Perhaps, but, you know, at the same time, I'd rather not just be that depressed full stop. I mean, I'd rather be depressed with, like, real reason, you know, because, you know, my job's shitty, I'm depressed about that, rather than, you know, I listen to a really sad album and I'm depressed about that.
Yeah, that's true.
But, I hope Scott Walker brings out something new soon.
I think he will. I mean, he's, there's been talk. He's recording stuff at the moment, but he's very, you know, he's very, once again, mysterious about it. He's not saying anything about it. But I think it won't be too long, hopefully, before we hear something. But I would be very interested to hear what he actually has made.
Did you see the film? Showed the recording of the last album. Yeah.
What's
it called?
Film.
Like Centennial.
30th Century Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, because the thing on he sort of hinted on the album. He's, you know, like he said his paths musically. He could keep going further into this dark abyss of his mind and create just, you know, weirder and weirder music. Or he was saying like he could try something like totally opposite, and there was just a little point in me thinking, you know, bloody hell, Scott Walker might release an album that sounds like, you know, the Walker Brothers did like 40, 50 years ago, which would just probably just be as shocking as another version of Tilt or The Drift.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah.
So bringing it back to Daz Corey.
Yes.
I definitely agree that it's a scary album, but I think kind of like what you're talking about with Scott Walker, it's very much scared because of, as you know, a consequence of what the subject matter is. I mean, there are moments like at the end of the first track, The Haunting Presence, where it sounds like it's just a field recording of him going sort of like nuts, just like banging on a piano. And
well, that's when he's apparently wearing one of the viewer's head devices. He pressed play on a recorder and then he put the device on, and then like an hour later he was in a huddled mass on the floor with the device, with the head device next to him, and the tape recorder clicked to stop, and he didn't listen to it for a few days, and when he did he was horrified by like the screaming and the banging and the crying and all that, and it's kind of very saddening and disconcerting, and it's definitely kind of creepy. Yeah.
But yeah,
I think that is creepy.
I think it's like unsettling, but it's powerful too. I mean, to put that, to be willing. I mean, like you said, I'm just gonna go ahead and assume it's real because, but whatever. But like yeah, to put that on record, to be willing to put that on record is really brave. I mean, you can say anything you want about someone kind of willing to put their suffering out there, but I mean, something that personal, that recording is pretty. That's pretty raw. Like, I don't know, it doesn't get much more personal than that, I guess I would say.
I think you're right. I mean, I think it benefits from not being, you know, trying to hide it away on. They're like, you know, metaphors, and I mean, obviously, it has all these stories and information, but I think it's fairly obvious. I mean, one of the tracks is called "I'm Going to Kill Myself," and it's hardly dancing about the subject matter. It's I think it's all better for dealing with it head on, and I think that's what makes it so much better. So much, I want to say the word like it's more richly rewarding, but it's like, you know, but it's rich in a sort of, you know, it's rich in a dark way. You know, it's like. I can't think of a good simile for that, but I hope it.
Like dark chocolate.
I was going to say dark chocolate, but you know, dark chocolate has a sweetness and it's tasty, and you know, there's nothing really.
Just pure, like pure cocoa powder.
Pure cocoa.
Well, but
I suppose.
I think the other thing is like these songs are actually good too. You know, that helps. Like
that. Oh yeah.
The music is actually like.
That's the sweetness in the dark chocolate.
Yeah, and I mean there are, you know, sort of like songs with hope in them. I can't think of. I mean they kind of, there's like this sense of like rising out of the ashes. I guess is like an easy metaphor to put to it. But there's definitely some sort of shining spots in it. All it's not just like this like. Because, like, when I read your review, I was a little bit afraid that it was going to be a little bit like too wallowing in like. But there's definitely a sense of like him struggling with it, not just like, oh, I'm depressed and like, you know.
Well, yeah,
stuff can go.
There was something, I can't remember where I was reading it, but I think it was an article on Pitchfork. But it's basically like talking about no one wants to hear this, really want to hear the sound of depression itself, because that just sort of, it'll make you depressed and it goes nowhere. If they don't mind hearing the sound of depression if it's if it comes to a, like a, an end, if it has a solution to the problem. Actually, I think now thinking about that, I got that from Woody Allen's latest movie, but nonetheless.
That's right.
Yeah, but it's the point. I mean, no one want, people want a like people want a happy ending, really, and that's they don't. If it's like, you know, if the album ended with him, you know, the sound of him killing himself, which I doubt would actually probably be released. I mean, that would you know probably cause more suicides because it was so heart-wrenchingly depressing to listen to, especially if you had to listen to it over and over again, but or if you wanted to. But I mean, it's. I think yeah, right. There's definitely glimmers of hope there. I mean, there's lifts in the music for brief moments, and you know, I think in the lyrics as well. But
so I don't know though. Helped it. Like I think you like. I mean, I guess I see what you're saying, but like an album like Hospice is like a good example of like thing like the Antlers Hospice as a good example of things being. I mean, I wouldn't call that album depression, but there. I mean, it's all about. Kind of someone dying and abusive relationship and all this stuff. There's not much happiness in that album, and it's pretty devastating to listen to. But I think a lot of people who kind of say, you know, music can't be that. Music has to be this. It has to, you know, you can't listen to an album that's it's depression will make you depressed. I sort of think that's like bullshit. I think music. I mean, that's one thing that music is good for is kind of telling stories that are. Otherwise, without music to kind of paint the mood, that are hard to get down. And like, for a subject like depression, music is, it seems like one of the best ways. I mean, because, like, yeah, this album, I mean, it can be depressing, but it's not, it's still, I don't know, like, I feel like there's, it can't, like, a depressing album can depress the listener and still be good, you know, like,
yeah,
you see what I'm saying?
I mean, because sometimes you know the listener wants to lounge in that mood and you know maybe just be depressed and find something to relate to. You know, like I used to say to my older brother when I was a lot younger and had absolutely no taste in music. I said like, why are you listening to Radiohead? They're so sad and depressing. And you know,
right.
I subsequently realized you know that's one of the good points about them. But you know, it's. I think it's yeah. It's about wanting to find something to match your mood because you can find things to want to make you happier if you're sad. But at the same time, you can find things if you just want to just be sad for a while.
I mean, I guess this is where we get into you know discussions about what art is for or whatever. But like as far as music, you can say you know. A lot beyond just something that will kind of let you escape or sort of give you, you know, be sort of a power trip, I guess, or empower you, which a lot of pop music, that's kind of the emotional tone that it goes for. Music can sort of give you validation in how you are, how you, your state of mind and all this stuff. And, you know, like you say, Radiohead, like, Let Down... probably my favorite Radiohead song, and that's one of the more depressing, sort of heartbreaking songs, like truly heartbreaking songs that they've written. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I remember that letdown was probably I think one of the first memories I have of actually just crying to like the music. I was walking home from school, and it was that part where he goes, "One day I'm gonna grow wings." The way he sings, it's just so. Beautiful. I was in the middle of the street, just started weeping. I was like, Jesus Christ.
And if you're listening on headphones as well, you get the double tracked one in each ear.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, it gets me every time.
Yep.
Oh, man, that song. So good.
Yeah. All right. On that note, on the letdown note, let's call it a podcast because we've been. Well, speaking of, we were talking about short podcasts before the show. This is our longest podcast.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
I have that effect on people.
But before we go, Rob, can you kind of tell everyone what's going on next week? What feature we got going on?
Next week is our end of year wrap up. We've got lots of lists for people to peruse. We've got top 50 albums with 20 honorable mentions. Top 100 songs of 2011, top 15 EPs, top 10 videos, top 20 classical releases, and maybe some columns as well, if people feel like writing.
And hopefully next week's podcast will probably all, whoever we have on the show will bring their kind of favorite album of the year, and we can talk about the album that the site gave album of the year, which will, I think that'll be interesting. So, that's been the podcast for this week. Thanks for being here, Ray.
It's a pleasure.
And see you guys next week. Say goodbye.
Bye.
See you guys.